Welcome to the Leadership Podcast, brought to you by Life West, the Chiropractic College. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Oberstein.
And I'm your host, Dr. Mary Oberstein.
And we're excited to have you join us as we bring special guests in the world of health, leadership, business success, and chiropractic. Our mission is to create a brighter future for humanity, and we are thrilled to walk this journey with you.
Enjoy this episode, and thank you for being with us today.
Well, hello, everybody. Dr. Ron Oberstein, president of Life Chiropractic College West, coming at you with another edition of our Life West Leadership Line. And today I have a good friend, and I have a person I've known in chiropractic since I was a chiropractor, but been in chiropractic much longer than me. I have the formidable Dr. Charles Chuck Gibson. Chuck, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're totally welcome. I want to give you a little bit of brief history around Dr. Chuck. There's so much that we could go through, but I'll just kind of share with you. I graduated Palmer in 1955. That's 66 years ago. It's funny. You were 1 year ahead of like Sid and Reggie and Dee Dee Umber and all those guys, right?
I shared classes with them.
Yeah, they were there while you were there. Yeah, I'm sure.
We had some classes together.
Yeah, because they graduated a year later, right?
And they were good friends.
Yep. And when Chuck graduated, he had to go to Cleveland College and spend 6 months in Cleveland College so that he could then get what he needed so that he could get a license in California. And then he came and got licensed in California in 1956, went into the Army, like a lot of the chiropractors back in those days, and spent time, which he'll get into, in the Army in 1957 and 58. And then in October 15th, 1959, he opened his practice in California, his own office, and just took off and excelled ever since then, became a team speaker at the Parker Seminars in 1960. October 1960 was his very first time. Ended up speaking there for umpteen years, never missed, spoke every single time, started Gibson Management in 1977. In the meantime, he was doing other businesses, running his practice. In 1974 to 2008, he also had a side business. We'll call it a side hustle. He was raising and doing things with Arabian horses. So not only chiropractic, because that's his main baby, and you'll, to this day, that's his love and his passion, but passion with horses. And he was able to just create this life, you know, through chiropractic and the principle of chiropractic that was just amazing. And I'm just so thrilled, Chuck, to have you here to be able to share with our viewers. So that was a brief introduction. There's a lot more we could have went into, but take us back. You know, you graduated from school, went to Cleveland, did your thing, ended up going to the Army, man. What was that like?
Well, first of all, I want to talk about the school for a moment.
Yeah.
It was a very exciting time. BJ was alive and a great influence on myself. And as you indicated, there were some really chiropractic world changers in school at that time. Fred Barge was a classmate, and then also Sid and Reggie and I had a close relationship. And Drew Humber, also Glenn Stillwagon, Walter Pierce, Tom Gilardi. We were all in school together, and it was a great time. It was also a wild time in the sense that chiropractic was not accepted the way it is today. But it changed relatively rapidly. When I got into practice, well, you asked about the Army. I went in the Army, and I wound up, by the way, I did not go voluntarily. But I wound up in the X-ray department at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. It was a great experience.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So wait, you actually were with President Eisenhower?
Twice.
Wow. I mean,
you have to understand, he was surrounded by Secret Service people, General Heaton, who was the commandant of our hospital, who later became the Surgeon General, and then also and Paul Dudley White, the great cardiologist of the day, et cetera.
Yeah, I think our viewers need to know this, because back in the day, we're going back into the 50s, you know, it was like chiropractic was not known as it is now, like you said. And, you know, just to be able to be there with Eisenhower, I'm hoping you stuck your Dr. Chuck Gibson chiropractor card right into his pocket after he.
Well, when I entered the X-ray department, the very first thing Colonel O'Neill told me is, I know about you chiropractors. You're not adjusting anybody in here. So we were pretty cool about it.
That's great. So then you left the service, obviously, you know, started your practice, right?
Uh-huh. Well, I worked for a year for Clarence Jensen, an upper cervical chiropractor. Mm-hmm. That was an extraordinary experience. And a year later, I opened my own practice and I had almost immediate success. So, and what I did was I copied initially what we did at his office. And it worked just as good for me. In fact, probably a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, success leaves clues. We know that. But the question I have for you is this, you know, you looked at, you know, Dr. Jensen, the guy was just packed, right? Just very successful, doing straight upper cervical, right? And, and you know, wasn't getting referrals, you know, from thousands of people around, right? In those days, it wasn't like that. You know, share with our viewers how people built their practices back then.
Well, frankly, you know, there was a great inhibition on advertising until the Bates-Steen decision by the United States Supreme Court in 1977. So basically, it was either lectures or referral. That was it. And Clinton Jensen, by the way, was seeing 400 visits a week when I showed up. I was his first associate without a CA. They just piled in. But we did lay lectures, and they worked really wonderful. And he was a charismatic personality. So he got lots of referrals. And I ran an ad the first day I opened announcing free examinations. And I got a visit from the state board 3 days later threatening to take my license away because it was illegal at the time to advertise free anything.
Right.
And I pleaded stupidity, which was true. It worked. Anyway, but I didn't spend any money for the first 5 years in advertising at all.
So when you got out, you know, obviously, you know, you grew your practice, you were successful out the gate, you know, you were involved in politics too, right? In California.
Yes. Yes. I was an activist until you would call me an activist. I was a pain in the ass to the state board but they would call me an activist today. Yeah. But the state board of examiners was made up of people who were delivering babies, doing bloodless surgery, et cetera. And there was a point where they were only passing people from straight chiropractic colleges, 25% pass, 75% flunk. And from the non-straight practice chiropractic colleges, it was 75% pass and 25% flunk. Mm-hmm. So we took on the state board and won, and that was I was the lead guy in that.
They must have loved you.
to a certain segment of the profession, I was a pariah, yeah. And to the other part of the profession, I was, you know, I hope a hero.
Yeah. And anyway, Chuck, for our newer practitioners. You know, this was the reality back then. You know, I mean, when you think about it, you know, the state boards kind of were the gatekeepers of who can come in and who couldn't come in. And it was very subjective. And like you said, 75% of the people coming from, you know, traditional chiropractic colleges were, you know, failed, you know, and 75% of, you know, coming from, you know, more, you know, non-traditional chiropractic colleges passed. And, you know, it was really the gatekeepers of who they wanted to have. And these were the fights that they had to go through.
Absolutely. In fact, at Cleveland College, in order to qualify for the board, we had to assist in two live deliveries, baby deliveries, and also do vaginal examinations just to qualify for the board and take physical therapy and bloodless surgery. Bloodless surgery out of hemorrhoids was a big deal in 1960.
Come a long way, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. A long way. So here you are, you know, you're from Southern Illinois. You know, you got a mixed background from Southern Illinois and also the coal fields of Alabama, right? Or cotton fields.
Cotton Fields, right? Cotton Fields
of Alabama and the coal fields of Southern Illinois. And here you are, you know, and you go to Palmer College. What got you to chiropractic?
Well, I had like 95% of all the people in school at that time, either myself or some either the individual or some relative had some dramatic experience in chiropractic. In my case, it was me. I had serious psoriasis in my entire body from age 11 to 16. And medical what medical services available to me failed. And I went to an upper cervical chiropractor because he had cured my friend, Bobby Ogden, of bedwetting. And so my mom said if he could cure Bob of his bedwetting, he could fix Charles' skin disorder. It was a miracle. And I was 16 years old, and within 3 months, 4 months, maybe you would never know I had psoriasis. And because of my disfigurement, I became a stutterer. And I tried to interest the chiropractor in maybe I could be a chiropractor.
Nice.
He didn't take me very seriously. It's like this kid can hardly talk. But I got to Palmer College at age of 17, and it was transformational for me. I changed totally from a scared kid to a pretty confident guy by the time I got out.
You know, it's interesting. I had a call recently with Dee Dee Ember, and yep. We actually had dinner together. We were in Sarasota, Florida a couple of weeks ago. And he, same thing, 17 years old,
yep.
Fresh off the boat. Now, he had a brother that was there, or a cousin. So his mom sent him to live with his cousin. And, you know, he'd never been away from home kind of thing, you know, like, you know, still wet behind the ears, right?
Absolutely. In fact, Dee Dee and I were good friends in school. He's yeah. 1 year old. You're behind me, he and Sid, you know, they were like twins.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dee Dee's brother who gave Sid the adjustment that set Sid on the path.
Oh, really?
Yeah, T.O. Umber, you know, gave him, he was a Grostic practitioner, you know, upper cervical. But so you get to Palmer, you know, you got BJ, you got all these immortals that are there, right? You know, BJ Palmer, Galen Price, I'm sure, was there, right?
Oh, yes. Oh, fantastic. Great man.
Yeah, Crowder, Dr. Crowder, I'm sure, was there. You know, all these people.
Bud, right.
What? Tell me, I mean, what was it like in the, you know, it's kind of like being with Lombardi and, you know, all these, you know, famous football coaches, you know?
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Because BJ was there, and except in the wintertime. He lectured every month, and he's one of the most powerful speakers you could ever hear. What he would do is he would do a lecture for the students starting at 8 o'clock, and when at exactly 8 o'clock they would lock the doors. And if you were late, you didn't get in, and nobody was late, and he would just spellbound you. I'm going to tell you the last time I saw B.J. Palmer. It was 1956. I was at Cleveland College at the time, and he was going to do he was doing a lecture for a bunch of us straights. There were about 200 people in the room, and it was divided. There were Palmer York was one of the leaders, and another guy by the name of Matlock, and they were arguing about nonsense. B.J. walks in the door. Matlock stands up and says, "B.J. Homer said yada yada yada," and BJ just waved his hand like that, and Matlock sat down and never said a word for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then he spellbounded the audience. It was fantastic. It was Beverly Wilshire Hotel, 1956. I remember it very well.
Yeah, you know, Herbert Ross Reaver became a friend of mine and Mary's and our kids and him and Millie, and he would tell me stories about BJ. And he would say, "Oh man, he didn't fool around. That guy, he was all business." That's what he said. You know, BJ was on it, right?
He was a fantastic person, and on the stage, extraordinarily charismatic. And he was a man with his mind made up, and he fought the good fight.
Yeah, he did. So share with me this. You know, you practice in the 60s, your practice exploded. I'm sure there was probably a lot of, you know, I mean, you know, you probably heard, I heard it in the 80s. You probably heard it 50 more times than I did a day. You know, well, my medical doctor said I shouldn't be coming to see you, you know, that kind of stuff. And all the adversity that you went through and all the stuff, all the roadblocks, right? You know, which only made us stronger, right? How'd you deal with it?
No, it's very interesting because most of the adversity, because, you know, when you're successful, you don't have a lot of adversity. Yep. The only thing I can remember is that occasionally people would, you know, I'd be at a social event and some person would say, oh, what kind of doctor are you? So I'm a chiropractor. Well, I don't believe in chiropractic. I would say, well, it would confront you, you know? And I would say, well, what do you do? He said, well, I'm an engineer. I said, well, I don't believe in engineers. I said, of course, I don't know anything about engineering and you don't know anything about chiropractic. So it kind of makes us both kind of stupid, doesn't it? And then we just kind of sneak away.
Yeah.
So I always had a positive approach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all the great things that ever come to me has come from chiropractic. So I know a lot of chiropractors did suffer a lot of adversities, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah.
All the riches that come to me come from chiropractic.
Yeah. And it is mindset, isn't it? I mean, it's mindset, you know, having that mindset, you know, moving forward. And I think for anyone who's successful, it's always going to be, you know, like we said, success leaves clues, but it's always, you know, above Atlas that makes it happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason I got into speaking at Parker is because I had so much, I saw so many people not doing well that I could reach out and help chiropractic through chiropractors. And then I started practice management for the very same reason. You know, I'm the founder of practice management as teaching chiropractors and consulting with them one-on-one. And I'm the guy that started it all.
Mm-hmm. So jump into Jim Parker. Share with us, were you close with him? Did you get to know
him? Yes. Yeah. Well, I was close to him for about a 16 to 18 year period. When I started Gibson Management, we kind of drifted apart. He was not too happy. And I don't blame him, you know, because it cut into his business. But from 1960 to 76, we traveled a lot together. In fact, I had a home at a ski lodge at Lake Tahoe. He stayed in it quite a bit. And we traveled also around the country.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a genius at what he did.
Which was, you're talking about?
That's, you know, practice management, teaching people. We're all flawed. We all have our own flaws. He had his flaws. BJ had his flaws. God, I have my flaws. But Parker was the right guy at the right time.
Yes, he was. He was. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know this. You know, even like Dr. Williams, Dr. Sid. You know, he was on the Parker stage. He was a team speaker for years, and then he just had the vision to go start Dynamic Essentials. And you know, it's just how life works, right? We got to keep growing. You went off and started doing management. You know, it's just how life works, right? We find our niche and what we're good at and how we can help humanity, and we move forward.
First and second Parker meeting that I went to, Sid was on the program. And then he started Dynamic Essentials after that. So Dynamic Essentials were started in either late 60 or 1961, early 61.
Did you go? Did you ever go to the early days of Dynamic Essentials?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I became quite good at personal injury work. And Sid asked me to teach personal injury at Dynamic Essentials. And I don't remember why, but I declined. Mm-hmm. I should have taken him up on it.
Yeah.
But he and I were friends to the day he died, yeah, as a matter of fact. In fact, we were in communication within 2 months before he passed away.
Yeah. What would you say would be the differences or maybe a few of the differences, if there were any at all, between DE and Parker?
I think Parker was more procedural and and DE is more philosophical and motivation. They both have a very important role to play.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you think about Parker's philosophy, it was a combination of above down, inside out, and concept therapy. And if you look at DE, DE is a was really dynamic, above down, inside out, with motivation and take no prisoners type approach.
Yeah,
and they both have a role to play in our profession.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. You know, let's switch gears because you I know your rich history in California,
uh-huh.
and you know, Life West was born out of Pacific States. And I know you had a good, you know, strong relationship with the two founders of Pacific States, right?
I did.
It's not, Georgians, we call them, right?
We were on what was known then as Gnostic practitioners. Today they call them NUCA practitioners. But George Anderson and George Wendland were the co-founders, and they were close friends of mine. And of course, it split off and became Pacific States, and then of course. Jerry Klum came in and he convinced Sid to take over, and gosh, things got good after that.
Yeah. Yeah. But were you with them, or did they, you know, were you in consult with them at all, or, you know, when they were looking at starting the school?
No, we were good friends, but I was not part of that. I wish I could say I was, but I was very busy representing the ICA at the time. And also, the co-founder, and I don't know if you're familiar, know this or not, but myself and Wes Lodgers and Ray Urslow and a guy named Frank, I can't think of Frank's last name right now, founded the ICA, IC, I don't know if you,
yeah, IC.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I did, the ICA California, absolutely.
Yeah, so we found it, and that was at the, because we thought that the ICA at the time was too dictatorial. It wasn't from above. It was from above down, but not inside out.
Right, right.
So so that happened.
So, Chuck, were you ever aware of an association in California called the Golden State Chiropractic Association?
I'm not sure. Refresh my memory.
It was just formed. We don't know who started it. Doug DeSiena, who practices down by, you know, in Irvine, uh-huh. called me up maybe about 30 years ago and said, mm-hmm. Ron, I found this association, and it's just, you know, it's a nonprofit. They never dissolved it, and it's still there, but no one paid the dues on it. So he paid the dues on it, put himself as president, me as vice president, just to keep it going, right? No association, just, you know, it wasn't a real association, just to keep it going in the nonprofit world, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. For the federal government. And I don't know if he's still paying or not, but it was an association that started somewhere along the line called the Golden State Chiropractic Association.
I'm not familiar with that.
No idea. But the ICAC came about when you did, you know, when you started that, you said you were a rep for the ICA, and then and you know, that came about to give the ICA voice in California, right?
Yes, it, exactly. And here's one of the interesting little sidelights. One of the four members was the guy that came to my office on the third day in practice. And told me my license was in jeopardy.
Because you were giving free exams, right?
his name was Rogers. He was an Upper Chicago chiropractor from Santa Rosa. He was a wonderful man.
I love it.
So the rest of that story was, I pleaded stupidity. And finally he said, if you look, I know you're a sincere young man. And if you'll just sign this letter, and the letter said, I'll never do this again. We'll forget about this. And so
you signed it and walked on, huh?
Yeah. And I didn't spend any money advertising for the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. But in the 80s, you know, when things were just flying, right? I mean, your advertising, what was your advertising budget monthly at that point?
Well, it all changed. It all changed in June of 1977, because what happened was that the United States Supreme Court ruled in a case called Brian and Osteen were two lawyers who were trying, the Arizona bar was trying to disbar them for advertising a $10 consultation fee. And it that nullified all laws and rulings that nullified discount advertising or free advertising. So the first thing that worked really good, I'm the first guy to, there was a guy named Tom, I'll tell you, there was a guy named Tom Turley. He ran a free exam ad over in the Bay Area, and he got 16 new patients on Saturday. He ran it for Saturday. Of course, nobody converted. And he called me up and says, well, why not? So give it to me, I'll show you. So I ran it on, I ran it on two different Mondays, and then they came in between, and we were able to process most of them and convert them. So that worked for a while. And then that ran out, and then we came up with a new ad called Can Chiropractic Help Me? And that ran for several years. Well, and then we came out with a newspaper, an insert, and that worked really good for years. But however, advertising always has a life of its own. Newspaper advertising started to die in the mid-1990s.
Right.
And then a guy came out with I apologize a letter. And that worked pretty, I didn't do that one. And that worked pretty good for a while. But by 2000, print advertising had run its course.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been very effective.
Yeah.
Right now, if you have a really good website and know how to do it properly, that's working really good. And also Facebook, if you have the right Facebook company, is working good. But in the final analysis, it's you and your philosophy and your ability to get to see people well. And the backbone of all practices has always been referrals. The rest is fringe. But the answer to your question is 5%. You asked me a question.
The question was, what was your budget?
5%. And I came up with that because I learned that most corporations have a 5% budget, advertising budget. However, there are exceptions to that. The soft drink, the alcohol, the beer advertising, and the automobile, they spend 10% of their total income on advertising.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the drug industry is, but it's got to be a hell of a lot more than that.
It's got to be a lot more. But I will tell you this, Chuck, you know, if it wasn't for you and people of your time and people, you know, who were practicing when you were and, you know, who really set the foundation, you know, I don't think we would be where we are today. Sure. With the awareness, you know, our consumer is still confused on what chiropractic is, and rightfully so. If I wasn't a chiropractor, I'd be confused also, you know, but they're confused because we do a lot of different things, you know. Yeah. We're not going to get into that right now, but bottom line is, without someone like you stepping up and doing the, you know, putting the work in, right, and like you said about BJ fighting the good fight, you know, we wouldn't be here today as strong as chiropractic is right now. So thank you for that.
One more comment. Thank you. And that is that Sir Isaac Newton said that we stand on the shoulders of those who came behind us, who came before us. And he gave he gave credit to Copernicus, who lived 200 years before him. So we stand on the shoulders of BJ and Sid and Reggie and Fred and all the great, you know, Tom Gilardi, and even you, and all the great people that's come before us, and the new generation probably doesn't know about it or even understand, but that's okay as long as chiropractic is prospering and growing and moving forward.
Absolutely, absolutely, and you know what, we've taken it upon ourselves, at least at the college, to make sure that our history. You know, we never forget our history, and it's so important, you know, and the names you just mentioned, you know, from Pierce and Stillwagon and yeah. You know, these people who were, you know, Vern Pierce in your school, people have to know who these people are, right? Because they were, you know, they were the ones who are out teaching technique and scientists and doing all these things that also propelled us, as you said. We stand on a lot of shoulders.
That's exactly right.
A lot of shoulders. Chuck, it's been awesome having you on the LifeWest Leadership Line. You are truly an icon in our profession. I am thrilled. You know, we were just together in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, over like right before Labor Day, right?
And we were.
Yep. And I got to tell the audience this, you know, we're at a conference and Chuck, front row. You're a front row man.
Absolutely.
Sitting right there taking notes, you know, whatever, you know, and I get it. You're only 42 years old, so you got to still. You know, it's just beautiful because, you know, you never stop learning. You never stop growing. You never stop changing. You know, you never stay stagnant, right? And that's chiropractic. It's always adapting and always growing and always, you know, shedding the husk off and bringing on the new skin and being able to keep making ourselves the best we can be. So thank you for all you've done for the countless chiropractors, the thousands upon thousands and hundreds upon thousands, maybe millions of patients that were touched because either directly through you, the people you've taught throughout the years, you know, it's just huge, and the people you've influenced. So we appreciate you so much.
Thank you very much, and God bless you.
God bless you.
Let's do this again.
We will. And to our viewers, thank you for being with Dr. Gibson and myself. A lot of stuff there. I mean, you know, listen, this is a history in the making, and I hope you got a lot out of it because, you know, there's so much that we could be doing to improve ourselves, to make us be the best versions of ourselves so that we can carry the torch and be able to get chiropractic out to more and more people and also live the life that we want, live the life that you so deserve. And as Dr. Gibson has done in his lifetime. So thank you. Keep spreading the message. Keep sharing these leadership lines. We drop these every other week. The weeks in between that, we drop our Life by Life West. Tag into those. We've got some really great people that we're interviewing and that we're bringing on our show. And my wife and I do the Life West Leadership Line. Keep being with us. I'm sorry, Life by Life West. Keep coming to us. Anything we can do for you, we're here for you. Know that we love and appreciate you. And I'll see you at our next episode. Thanks so much.
Have a great day.
You got it.
Thank you for joining us today. And for the love, commitment, and passion you emanate every day.
Together, we know we will make this world a better place.